Hello and welcome to the Evolution of Business podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Brady, and I'm here today with Greg Lederman. He's a highly acclaimed speaker, New York Times best-selling author, and the president of employee engagement for Reward Gateway, a global employee engagement company. He's also the founder of Brand Integrity, a leadership development and employee engagement company. For the past 16 years, Greg has worked with leading organizations to put into practice sustainable engagement solutions that don't just work, they matter. These initiatives go beyond simple thank you programs to increase employee engagement and improve the work culture, leading to better customer experiences, all of which help to accelerate business results. And that's, I think, what we'll dive into today is how to do it and how it hits the bottom line. But I did have a meeting a little while back with Greg, and in the meantime have read the book Crave, his latest of three books, correct?
Yep.
And there's plenty of dog ears here and lots of notes that I've taken, so I'm really looking forward to this. Thanks for joining us, Greg.
Pleasure to be here, Andrew.
So take us back earlier in your career. You know, in Crave, you talk about how you dove into decades worth of research on employee motivation. What kind of inspired that, you know, going down that rabbit hole of all the academic research?
Well, the research, there was something that really triggered the research was something that happened with my father years ago, which was basically, long story short, he was forced to retire from a 35-plus year dental career running his own practice, and was suffering from what they thought was pre-Alzheimer's, the first diagnosis, but turned out to just be depression from a lack of purpose, if you will. So I started doing a little bit of research on how people get their purpose back. And in doing that research, I came across these studies from the 1950s that showed that people really have three cravings, which I wrote about in the book, that if they get that fulfilled, they'll be more motivated, they'll be happier, and they'll be more productive people. And it turned out my father was missing those three cravings. That's respect, purpose, and relationship. So then you start getting into the research, and one thing leads to the next. The first study I stumbled upon, which I opened up the Crave book with, is a study from 1955 to 1959 called The Motivation to Work. That study cited 128 previous studies. So there's a plethora of research out there that says, hey, there are certain things that if we get them, we're more motivated, we're happier, we're more productive. And I've seen the reality that when you don't get it, whether you're a retiree who happens to be, the retirees happen to be the largest group of depressed people, whether it's the retiree type group or whether it's people just at work not getting what they crave, makes work miserable for a lot of people.
Very interesting. Yeah, I've seen some studies that compare how much of an impact your boss can have on your health versus your doctor. And in a lot of cases, the boss and the work environment can have just as much or more of an impact. So it's really interesting that your dad kind of experienced that firsthand.
Yeah, he experienced it firsthand. And then I started just looking at the aging population. And that was a decade and a half ago. And no surprise, about 25% of our client work from Brand Integrity was in the aging services space. And interestingly, Reward Gateway, as you mentioned in the introduction here, they acquired my firm, Brand Integrity, last summer. And one of the reasons I went with them, one of the things that attracted me right out of the gate, was a slogan they were using called "Bad Bosses Ruin Lives." And that got my attention because it's true. Bad bosses ruin lives. And the sad reality is most bosses aren't very good bosses. They don't learn the typical skill set that's needed to be a really awesome boss that really is able to balance both a focus on performance and humanity. And it's not that they're bad people. They struggle to be good bosses. And most companies are putting too much pressure on folks, and then they start to struggle to prioritize things. And being a good leader is really, really difficult. So I evolved the company over the years to focus more and more on helping managers and leaders be more effective and trusted managers and leaders, because if you do that, then you're giving people more of what they crave, and that fuels the work culture and the customer experience.
Yes. So you also mentioned in the book, and I completely agree, that there's this huge chasm between what science and research proves and then what the businesses are actually doing and what they're willing to invest in. Do you have any sense from your experience of why you think that is? Why the research isn't making its way into the business realm and being enacted?
I think it started out in that people weren't seeing it. So once it gets out there, then people see it. Now they know what it's about, but now you have to take action and do something with it. So secondarily, you need to know what to do. Have you read Daniel Pink's book, Drive?
Oh, yeah.
So Daniel Pink's book, Drive, continues to be an annual bestseller. I mean, it sells an unbelievable amount of books. Every time he produces a new book, his old book, Drive, from 2011, keeps selling more, it looks like, than the newer books. What's interesting about that, and we're both Rochesterians, is he features two guys, Ed Deasy and Richard Ryan from the University of Rochester. He mentions them 50-some-odd times by name in the book, and the entire premise of the entire Drive book is based on their research. It got my attention that nobody really knows these guys. Everybody's reading Drive, which tells you the surprising truth about what motivates us, but doesn't tell you what to do about it. So that's why I wrote Crave, A, to feature these guys, DC and Ryan, which I do up front in the first part of the book as well as in the appendix, to really tell their story as the pioneers on motivation, but also to give the recipe on how to. So we had some claims to fame at Brand Integrity. More than 90% of our clients' employees qualified as engaged when you looked at engagement the same way that Gallup studies it, and they keep reporting now for 18 years that two-thirds of the work environment in America is not engaged. Well, how are our clients getting three times the amount of engagement? They're following a very simple recipe, which is all designed to give people more of what they crave, the respect, purpose, and relationship. And that starts with leaders. That starts with leadership.
Yeah, I actually didn't know, I'm embarrassed to say, until I was in my master's program in positive psychology, that those self-determination theory gentlemen, DC and Ryan, were right here in Rochester at the U of R.
Yeah, I was teaching for 9 years at the university, and their offices were in the building next to where I taught, and before I even knew who they were.
Wow. Yeah, you know, there's decades worth of research that they've been doing, and they've spawned many other researchers that are doing similar work. In their self-determination theory, they hit on those three elements of the autonomy, the competence, and the relatedness or the belonging. How do you see that as correlated or connected to the things that people are craving, the three things that you're mentioning?
So I laid this out in the book for each one of those. I mean, you can't provide autonomy without showing respect and helping people see a purpose, or there'll be no autonomy. Same thing with relatedness. It's directly connected to relationship. And then the competence as well, same thing. It's completely connected to respect and purpose. So again, the three cravings are respect, purpose, and relationship. When I laid that out for DC and Ryan, I'll never forget at DC and Richard Ryan. Richard looked at me afterwards and is like, this is a perfect fit. And I said, yeah, what I've done is taken what is complex for most people. If you don't make it really simple, people don't do anything with it. And I've made it really simple so people can execute it. And the proof is in the results. I mean, 91% employee engagement across 20 different industries, and they're all following the exact same method. There's no other recipe that they're following.
So tell us a little bit how you went from discovering this research and really trying to understand what it is that motivates people and how to enact it. And then how do you start to bring that into creating a company out of it, creating Brand Integrity and really making this something that other organizations can utilize?
Well, I started the company first, so that makes that a whole lot easier. So I started the Brand Integrity back in 2002. It started as an organization that helped help companies define their core values and then put behaviors behind them and then integrate them into your people systems, from hiring to onboarding to performance conversations. Then we built some software technology for measuring engagement on both the customer side and the employee side. And the software also facilitated a social recognition platform. So having that all in place, you start to see, well, which companies are really doing a good job driving engagement, which ones are struggling, what are their leaders doing and what are they not doing? It was about 5 to 6 years into that process that I really started to dive into the research. So now the research is complementing what we're already doing with our clients. So we started to bring the concept of respect and relationship and purpose in front of our clients. And then you start to see even more so when companies embrace that methodology and started to run programs teaching their leaders how to deliver what people crave. They realize two things. One, they're driving engagement in the customer experience improvements. But two, those leaders feel better about themselves as leaders because they're being more effective and trusted leaders. And the number one thing that these organizations are doing, and it's in the subtitle of my latest book, Crave, is 10 minutes by Friday. Just take 10 minutes a week to stop and share a success of someone living those values or living your hospitality experience or your safety initiative, whatever that focus area is. If each leader will take 10 minutes every week or so and just capture and share a success, whether they're using a social recognition platform like we provided or some of the offline ways of doing it I write about in the book, if they just invest that time, it has an immediate and dramatic impact on the psyche of individuals at work and what that does to their engagement level.
Yeah, one of the things that you do talk about in that book that I was reading and found very interesting, you're talking about not just, you know, those 10 minutes of recognition, but making that recognition very strategic. So can you talk a little bit about what kind of some of the components of strategic recognition are and what sets that apart?
That's a great question, because it'd be remiss of me to just say, oh yeah, our clients are just doing a great job with employee recognition, and that's why they're having the tremendous success driving engagement and driving the business results that they are. But it's the way they're doing recognition, which you keyed in on, Andrew. They're following a really simple three-step process. Tell the action of what somebody did. So you have to be specific. Don't just thank someone for coming in early or staying late helping out on a project. Be really specific. If they double-check that paperwork to make sure we had no errors, make sure you highlight the specific activity they did. The second thing you have to do is connect it to a focus area. So if you have a set of core values or hospitality standards or customer service standards, make sure to always connect it to that, to the, one of those core values. Let's assume in this example, this hypothetical example, that operational excellence is a core value. Then, hey, thanks for double checking that paperwork to make sure there were no errors for the client. That's a great example of protecting quality and making sure we're operationally excellent, teaching them to use the words of the values. So now you've got the action connected to a focus area. The third piece that's super important to making sure you're delivering that crave experience for people is to share the impact. So I take it one step forward to make that recognition strategic by saying, hey, again, thanks for double checking that paperwork to ensure there were no errors. That is a great example of operational excellence, but it also instills confidence for our customer, our client in this case, and that causes them to want to buy more and more often. Now I've shared the impact of what the person did. So often when leaders are recognizing people, they leave off the impact of what it leads to. And if you do that, you're depriving that individual from getting that full respect for what it is that they do and helping to see the purpose and impact that they make, which are two of the primary cravings. When you take that little, those extra minute or two just to make sure the recognition is strategic, tell the action, the focus area, and share the impact. When you follow those three steps, it changes the whole playing field around recognitions and how they happen in your enterprise. They become stories that are then shared at team meetings. They're then shared at group meetings. They're talked about. They're on the intranet. They're on the social recognition platforms. And some of them become folklore over time. And they set a really awesome example of what a best practice looks like. So our clients start to think of recognition as strategic and in that it shares best practices of how we want to be doing things. It's always focused on results. That's the key. Always focused on results. That way, you're not looking at thinking about recognition as recognizing people because it's their birthday or their work anniversary, which those are nice things to do. I'm not saying don't. There's a place for that, but that's not going to be a game changer in driving engagement and accelerating business results in your organization.
Yeah, you know, when folks are talking about how they're going to give praise, being strategic, talking about the impact that it has. And as you're mentioning, I talk about this a lot as well, is those stories that you tell. You know, we as leaders really need to become great storytellers. It's the way that when we're children, we learn, you know, right from wrong through these folk tales, and we learn about morality and all these sorts of things. And you don't want people to have to just memorize verbatim, here's what the definition of this value is. But if instead they've heard a few stories that have been told, and that folklore that you're telling that gets told inside the company, that really becomes part of the culture and a driver of that behavior.
You're spot on. In my first book I wrote in 07, it was just called Achieving Brand Integrity. I wrote about the company that, I don't know if I connected the dots for the reader, but it ended up being the CEO of the company where we built our first recognition program, way before the technology that we built. This was back in 2002. But that CEO, and I remember they were our first big client at the time, so this was actually a courageous comment that I actually made. But he came to me and he said, you know, we had just gotten done defining the values, or we were just embarking on, and he said, you know what I do around here is if people can recite our mission, I hand them $20. And this guy is 6'4". I just had breakfast with him. He was home in Rochester for the holidays, and I've stayed friends with him for years. But he looked at me, he's like 6'4", this big, you know, guy who comes up, he's standing in the hallway with me, wants to tell me about what he does to reinforce the mission. He says, I hand people $20 on the shop floor. It was a manufacturing company, if they can recite the mission. And I just looked up at him, because here I am at 5'7¾". But I'm looking up at him, and I looked at him, and I said, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And he was just stunned. And I'm like, and I was almost stunned that I said it. I'm like, but it was. I'm like, I said to him, I said, what is the reason for, or the benefit to you in getting them to memorize the mission? All you should care about is whether they do it. They don't have to memorize it. They have to internalize it and personalize it, which is way different than just memorizing it. Which is why we coach our clients to stick to about 4 or 5 values. Don't worry about people memorizing the descriptions of them. Don't worry about memorizing the behaviors, although we put behaviors behind every value in our work. The reality is, what's most important is, are people doing it? Are people living the brand? Are they living the values? That's all that matters.
Yeah, that keys into one of the other things that jumped out at me in the book, where you're talking about you can't motivate people. Instead, it's the leader's job to kind of create that environment where people can tap into their own internal motivations. And that's certainly something that self-determination theory, DC and Ryan's work would support. What does that actually look like in practice for that leader to help people tap into their own true motivations, rather than, the $20 to recite what was trying to, get drilled into their heads?
Yeah, I mean, you picked up on a really important discovery that DC and Ryan had. I mean, Ed DC, he coined the term intrinsic motivation. He wrote a book called Intrinsic Motivation, appropriately titled in 1971. And then later on, I think it was probably like 5 to 10 years later, is when he actually changed the question from what can we do to motivate others, to changing the question, as you were alluding to, Andrew, what can we do to create the conditions where people will motivate themselves? If motivation's intrinsic, then it's inside of us. You can't beg for more and bribe people for more of it at work. You have to create the environment, as I say over and over again in the book, or as Ed DC and Richard Ryan say, create the conditions for more motivation. That's the leader's job. So what are the things they do? Well, the recognition is a big part of it. Just making sure you're doing your 10 minutes by Friday to stop, share a success of where someone's living the values, and recognize them for it. But another area is just in plain old communications, making sure that you're communicating messages in an organization, not just to their direct reports, but the work teams, the departments, divisions, across divisions. Organizations really struggle to communicate effectively. One of the reasons that I partnered with Reward Gateway and found them as the perfect home for brand integrity is, out of all the companies that I met, they had by far the best communications platform. That was their sweet spot, communications across an enterprise and how to keep people engaged with all different kinds of communications at all different levels in the organization. And then I thought, well, couple that with our strategic recognition play, as well as the employee surveys, the customer surveys, and the whole focus on living the value. Values. It just looked like a match made in heaven, but it's that communication piece that I felt like all of our clients struggle with it, and pretty much every prospect I ever spoke with, and we're only helping them with one single part of it. But if you can create a stronger communications platform across the enterprise, one that truly keeps people in the know on what's going on and lets people socialize and participate in that, that helps create that environment.
Yeah, and as self-determination theory talks about, and we all kind of crave this purpose, right? We all want to belong to something and be a part of something, greater than ourselves, and maybe have an impact on other people. Whatever our specific purpose is, I think that's a lot of times that influence or that belonging, that being a part of something. And so I think that's part of when you were talking about impact for strategic recognition. That's where I see it sometimes come into play, is if people can see how, this maybe seemingly mundane task that I'm doing is impacting either the bottom line of the organization or the success of other people in the organization. Yep. Or the success of our clients. you start to feel, okay, here's how I'm having a positive impact day to day.
And it doesn't have to be a wow moment that you've saved the world. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges is organizations launch these recognition programs. And I got to tell you, I don't mean to be negative, but if I've seen 100 self-started programs inside of an organization, I've seen 99 horrible ones. They just don't even work. Like, you've got to solve world hunger to get recognized, or we literally eliminate the recognizing people for doing a good job at their job. But in that example I gave you earlier where you were double checking the paperwork and demonstrating operational excellence. What if you don't typically do that in your job? Wouldn't the best way to get you to keep doing it be to recognize when you do it well and share that in a productive way? That's what I try to teach and get across in Crave. When we talk about how are these leaders creating the environment, they are quite simply leveraging the power of recognition to reinforce whether people are doing a good job, above and beyond, or a wow moment, something really amazing. Those are all different levels of recognition. You know, one of the ways that I make it easy for readers in the book is I use the analogy of football, right? Even for, and I made it so elementary that even non-football fans will have gotten a number of calls saying, I know nothing about football. Know nothing about American football. I had one lady call me. She said, but I totally get what you're talking about. There are championships. You win the championship, that's like a major milestone, right? But in order to win the championship, and by the way, if organizations are basically giving out awards just for championships, they've got real problems because you have to score a lot of touchdowns in order to win a championship. Touchdowns are things that are happening regularly. They're project successes, they're team successes. Maybe a championship is like a big, huge sales win or it's a milestone that an individual has reached. But what gets missed most of the time are the first downs. Because if you don't have enough first downs, you don't score enough touchdowns. And if you don't score enough touchdowns, you don't win championships. So you've got to recognize the effort level that happens as what I call first downs. Again, sometimes it's just doing your job and doing it well. Sometimes it's above and beyond. And sometimes it's a wow moment. Now, getting back to what we talked about at the very beginning, Andrew, leadership is really tough. It's kind of like parenting. Like, not everybody's a good parent, and not everybody should be a parent, and not everybody is a good leader, and there are many people that shouldn't be leaders in organizations that are. But you can't be a good parent if you're basically ignoring your child and being a jerk to them on Monday through Saturday, and then on Sunday you take them to the amusement park. Like, that doesn't make you a good dad, right? Like, you were a lousy parent Monday through Saturday, and then you took them to the amusement park on Sunday. That is not being a good dad. It's no different than what leaders do, and they do it all the time, where they just don't recognize people enough. They're just so zoned in on what they need to be doing every day, and they're just putting out fires all the time, that then all of a sudden they do all their recognitions at one time. So it's the same concept. I mean, you don't show your spouse or your significant other that you love them, you know, by just telling them once a year, right? You don't just wait till the anniversary to tell them that you love them. Like, that's just not how it works to have a really healthy relationship. Sure. That's filled with respect and strong relationship.
In fact, I think sometimes the leaders are not just because they're busy doing other things, but sometimes they want to, and you talk about this in the book as well. Sometimes they don't want to give too much praise. They think it's going out of style, or they're running out of it, or it's going to lose its meaning if they do it too often. So I've certainly heard that before. What do you say to a leader who may, you know, try to push back on you and say, I don't want to recognize them too often, or else it may lose some of its meaning or impact, or, you know, something like that?
So when we have a prospect over the years that have brought that up on a number of times, we just show them a graph of our clients, because our client retention over the last decade is like 97% or so. And we have clients that have been with us 5, 7, 8, 9 years. And you can just see the graph of just the continued increase in their amount of recognition. It just doesn't die off over time. Then we always like to compare that, though, that's a manufacturing company. Look at their quality mistakes going down, or look at their quality output going up, or if it's a retailer, we're showing the recognition and how it's driving average sale per customer. If it's a professional services company, we might be looking at employee turnover going down. We're just looking at business metrics to show them that recognition keeps getting better in a healthy way. The conversation almost always turns to the different generations coming together at work, right? So I just did my first speech on Tuesday. I was keynoting a conference in Boston. And to my knowledge, it was the first time I had a Generation Z in the audience. Because I do, you know, there's a point in my speech where I say to folks, hey, look, we're about to embark on the first ever in our work society. We're going to have four generations all working together. It's never happened before. So we've got our millennials, people, you know, that are... been the main focus for the last decade or so.
Yeah, I'm a millennial and I feel old now. Now that people are talking Gen Z, we're long gone now.
You got to get ready for it because while there were 70 some odd million millennials, there's 72 million Generation Z that are going to come into our workforce in the next 5 to 7 years or so. And so we have the millennials and of course the X where I am and the boomers. And now we're going to have this Generation Z, people born after 1996 coming into the workplace. People have been freaking out about millennials for quite some time. I'll never forget, it was probably 10 years ago. I'm sitting there getting ready for a meeting. The CEO comes in. It's a very large professional services organization. He sits down. He's kind of rubbing his head and he's rubbing his face. And I looked at him. I said, Bob, what's going on? He goes, oh, these the young kids. These young kids we got working here. He's like, they expect a trophy at the end of the first week and a raise at the end of the first month. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. You know, he seems really bothered by that. But I started to pay attention to how many of our clients were struggling with the younger generations in the workplace and still are today. People are still trying to find the recipe, yes, of how to create a stronger work culture, but they're trying to understand what's really going on. And in the book, I shed a little bit of light on this. One of the things that companies, as I mentioned a few moments ago, absolutely struggle with across the board is communication with their workforce. And it's one of the top three things that millennials want a little more of, and they're demanding it. So we're taking something we already suck at doing at work, and we're asking every single company that's hiring young folks to ratchet it up and give us a little bit more and be a little better. So we're like asking everybody to be a little better at something they're not already good at. And it causes a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety and a lot of frustration. And then we make a lot of assumptions and stereotypes and point fingers at people. And at the end of the day, all it's leading to is unnecessary turnover and a lot of people not getting what they crave at work.
It's interesting because when you're mentioning that, and it gets talked about a bit in Crave and in, you know, self-determination theory research, that I think in some ways some of the different generation stuff is overblown, right? Like there's different technology that we're dealing with and those sorts of things, but ultimately we're still craving a lot of the same things. And you even talk about how, you know, it still makes an impact. These same crave elements and the same pieces of self-determination theory, you know, no matter what age you are, you want some similar things. But maybe there's, you know, different technology at play, or there's a few different nuances. But I think that's partly a good thing, right? Is that if we don't over focus on the differences anyways, and we focus on what is universal in terms of wanting recognition and wanting to belong and wanting autonomy and competence, that we don't have to stress out quite so much. But I'm interested as well because brand integrity was around for a while since you started it. Was there anything that you noticed, maybe not in terms of people still wanted recognition no matter their age or stage, but over time was there ways that you found that different generations using different technologies or different ways for that method of giving recognition kind of evolved?
I got to tell you, I don't think it was all that noticeable by generations. You know, you're spot on. I quote Maya Angelou a lot to make the point you were making. We're all more alike than unlike, my friend. You know, and I quote that in every single speech when I talk about the generational workforce is coming together. The reality is everybody wants good jobs that are suited to their talents. Everybody wants managers and bosses that care about them. And everybody has the same craving. You know, I wrote the book, I titled it Crave because it's the human condition. Everybody craves the same thing: respect, purpose, and relationship. They may add different weights to different parts of it, but in general, everybody has the same craving. And when it comes to use of technology, that's really another component in addition to communication that the younger generations want more of. But the older generations are getting on board with it too. I mean, my gosh, I was just before coming here, I was pulled up the Facebook and I'm looking at my father who is forwarding something, I think, every day, right? And so you go into some of these senior living, assisted living and senior living places and they're on technology. I mean, it's not like a social recognition platform is going to be new and different for an organization. We launched in a chain of tire stores about 10 years ago. And I remember at the time thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to do this? There's people of all different generations. You know, you have old workers, you got younger workers. They're not on technology all day, but somehow they miraculously capture and share dozens and dozens and dozens of success stories on world-class service that are shared throughout their enterprise on a month-to-month basis.
Yeah, that's the second time that retirees have come up. I don't know. Maybe we got to figure out how to create the culture of purpose for recognition for retirees. Maybe there's some kind of business opportunity there.
Well, they're losing their purpose, but so are athletes, for instance. So are anybody that's not doing what they've been doing for a while and feeling a lot of respect for it. You know, so when I think about athletes, after doing the research and writing the book, I think about them in a whole new light when someone has the career that just kind of ended, or they ended because of injury, or for whatever reason, they've been doing something and people have been respecting them for it. It was their purpose, their calling, what they did and were passionate about it. And they had relationships all throughout, whether it's their teammates, their coaches. When they are forced to retire, that's gone. And they really struggle, from what I can see in the stories that I've heard. They very much struggle to get that craving fulfilled, which then impacts their motivation, which impacts their happiness and their productivity.
So you're talking about these universal pieces of what we're craving. Hopefully we've convinced people not to ration out their praise in the workplace or anywhere really. If someone is really buying in, they're on board, they say, yes, I recognize this is an issue. I recognize I need to do this more often. Walk me through what it would look like if I'm Joe or Sally, business owner, and want to engage with brand integrity or want to engage with the organization.
Reward Gateway.
Reward Gateway. What does that look like? How do I get started? And what does that kind of process look like?
Yeah, so it needs to be an organization to partner with Reward Gateway, and by all means, if anyone is interested in chatting about that, I'd welcome the conversation. To partner with a Reward Gateway, you'd have to have an organization that has a pretty significant group of employees. Let's say, 100 or a couple hundred employees, and you'd be in need of desire bringing those values to life. So if you don't have those values, that's something we can help you put into place pretty quickly. But what are the core values we want? And then from there, it's all about helping managers and leaders leverage technology, whether it's the communication platform or the social recognition platform, for instance, as a way to constantly communicate with the workforce and reinforce what those values are and where we're living them really, really well. Then, of course, we can provide some guidance and direction on how to use the performance conversations for those situations where people are not living it. And then up front in that employee life cycle, we have some tools and techniques for how do you hire for those values? How do you make sure you're onboarding people and indoctrinating them to your culture and your core values, so that by the time someone gets to the 2-week or 1-month mark, they completely understand what it looks like, not just how others are living the values, but how they're doing it as well. So just visit rewardgateway.com and you can learn a whole lot more about what the platform looks like and start the conversation.
And so when we first met, you were still the owner of Brand Integrity. Tell me a little bit about this acquisition. What does that bring to the table for you? What additional ways does that allow you to serve your clients better?
Well, for one, we've got a lot more resources and technology to be able to provide our clients. So we would go in with an engagement platform that had employee surveys, a social recognition platform, and customer engagement survey type product. And now the Reward Gateway folks bring a communication platform, some survey technology as well, and a perks business as well. They've built their Reward Gateway organization started in the UK. We have a presence in Australia as well. In the UK, they had a tremendous amount of success starting out in the perks business, offering employee discounts and different types of benefit products. So now being able to provide that full suite on one engagement platform is a pretty powerful combination. So we've got the communication engine with the social recognition, with the perks. To me, that's a winning combination based on the challenges that most organizations face. We struggle to provide benefits and communication and recognition to our workforce that fuels the craving of respect, purpose, and relationship. Now we can provide that to them in a world-class platform.
Interesting. Well, and I imagine, as with many things, there's an upfront cost, but a pretty strong ROI in terms of, you know, the culture, but it ultimately impacts the bottom line. I know that that's something that I'm personally always talking with leaders about. You know, when I'm talking about leadership development and building your culture, that yeah, there's going to be some upfront investment, but it impacts the bottom line. And that's quite frankly a big piece of why conscious capitalism gets attention, is that they're able to start to show some of the ways that those companies, you know, beat the S&P 500, or, you know, many of your clients, as you've mentioned, are on the best companies to work for, and you know, they've similarly shown that they're better than the market average. But walk me through, you know, some of those conversations. How do you maybe convince some of those leaders? How do you tie it to the bottom line? You know, how do you make them understand that?
So for one, you're absolutely right in that. It all comes down to monetizing results. We built our entire business on the concept that unless you can build the business case for it, you probably shouldn't be investing your time and energy in it. So why don't we just improvise this and pick an industry? Pick any industry you can think of. Tell me about a business, and we'll talk about a hypothetical of how they, but it'll be a hypothetical, but I'll use one from our client base because we're in over 20 different industries, so. You're bound to pick one I'm familiar
yeah.
with.
Yeah. All right. So let's say we're dealing with an architecture firm.
So it's an architecture firm. So they're looking at design rework as one of their metrics, mm-hmm. right? They do not want to do rework on design, which means there's a whole lot of activity that needs to happen with their project managers and their architects and their engineers to be able to meet with clients. And one thing they also tend to do is do scorecards at the end of projects. They have their clients rate them on how did we do. Right, so let's take that as an example. If we want to see more of people double checking the work to make sure that there's accuracy in design and collaborating with clients and being innovative, those are things architectural firms want, and they're probably in their core values. We would train the management group and the workforce that hey, let's spot examples of these things in action because we want to recognize what we want to see more of. So what we do is teach the managers on how on projects to look for opportunities where project managers or architects or engineers are being innovative in collaborating with the client. Capture those examples and share them. Then over time, as that engine gets going, now we've outlined like 50 different ways you can recognize people. They're capturing and sharing those examples throughout the year. Let's say there's 500 people in this. Let's say there's 100 people in the architectural firm. That would typically equate to about 25 or 30 shared successes, really good ones every month on the light end. Let's mm-hmm. assume it's 25. So now, every quarter we have, you know, 100 or so successes. Now what we'll do is over time, we'll look at the amount of recognition that's happening and is it impacting the design rework or the amount of time we're spending on projects. Or then we could look at the customer scores on those project scorecards, the client scores at the end. And over time, after 6 months to a year, year and a half, we start to look at the recognition data and we can start to connect and see the influence it's having on the results we care most about. Are we having to do rework that's costly? How often are clients referring us? Those are other metrics. So we start to compare recognition data to the actual metrics that matter, as we call them, within the client base. And you can start to see those connections.
So,
and it doesn't matter what business you're in. You can start to see connections between recognition activity, if done right, done the right way, and the business outcomes they want to see more of.
So that is definitely a key to getting inside of the organizations, being able to show that. I truly believe, and clearly you do as well, that there is an ROI to it. And your results really speak for themselves. You know, you've mentioned how 65% of your clients are recognized as best companies to work for, and you've helped employees increase employee engagement by, I think, 68% that you said that, you know, and this is all in a time where Gallup has shown that disengagement numbers are about 2/3 of the workforce, and it hasn't changed in decades.
And it's leading to turnover, which, but that architectural example, it is really expensive to lose people. So if you're architectural firm, you're probably spending on recruitment costs and hiring costs and training costs and the mistakes that happen. I'm going to guess it's probably like $40,000 or $50,000 every time you have to hire someone new, averaging out between a lower level individual to a senior level. So a big one would be to look at the turnover over the course of a 12, 18, 24 month period, comparing that to the recognition activity as well. That might be the biggest in cost savings and very easy to monetize.
And the other thing that I'll ask, maybe if you have any advice, is for the people that come and say, gosh, I really would love to create this culture of more recognition, but how do I tell my boss, or my boss isn't on board, or you know, what are there any ways that maybe a mid-level manager, or maybe even you know an entry-level employee, can create or at least do what they can to influence creating a better culture in their organization?
Well, look, there's a couple ways for me to answer that question, and by the way, that's exactly why I wrote the book Crave, was for that mid-level manager all the way up to the senior executive. So the short, easy answer is give them a copy of Crave. Hopefully it opens up their eyes. But there's an exercise right smack in the middle of the book called Recognition Accelerates Results. It's a three-step exercise. What are the metrics that you want to see improved? What do you need to recognize people for that helps lead to that metric? That's step two. And then the third step is how you might monetize those results. And what we'll typically do to convert those bosses out there, that they're not jerks that just don't want to recognize people. Well, sometimes they are. Sometimes they're jerks and they just don't want to recognize people because they felt like people don't need it, because maybe they felt like they didn't need it, but they're just actually getting it in different ways. But if you take that exercise in the concept of Crave and you put it in front of those bosses that are what I call the doubters versus the believers, you can convert those doubters. And I did it. I have an example of a healthcare company in the book that said, you know, we're funding this recognition program because it's, you know, it's a nice thing to do. You know, everybody's got them. We got to have it. And I said, really, you're doing it because it's a nice thing to do? We said, well, what are the biggest challenges you have in the business? And it was this chief operating officer of this large healthcare institution. He said, well, nursing turnover, it's killing us, especially nurses who we train, and then they leave within the first 6 months. And it costs like $80,000 to hire a nurse in this particular market. And we said, okay, well, if recognition is just a nice to have, why don't we do this? Why don't we outline the behaviors that nurses do that should be recognized? And let's get everybody focused on recognizing everyone, but in particular nurses. And let's capture and share as many successes, 10 minutes by Friday. Let's get every manager on board with this concept to do one recognition a month. I remember this because it's 10 minutes a month only equates to 2 hours of someone's time a year. Okay, and that was the goal, was just get all the managers. I think there are 130 managers in this organization. Again, it was several thousand people in this company, in this healthcare institution. But what happened was remarkable. While the management committed to 10 minutes a month, and only about two-thirds of the managers actually invested those few hours, they still drove up the amount of recognition by over 130%. But what was remarkable was looking at what happened to nursing turnover. And within 24 months, the nursing turnover of those new nurses was down 69%. No, wait, I'm sorry. It was 45%. But what was remarkable was the impact it had on nurses across the entire institution. Turnover was down 29% across all nurses. That saves them millions of dollars. They're spending maybe $100,000 at the most on a recognition program, at the most. The 69% was the food service workers. I had that number in my head because that was the percentage decrease of turnover in the food service industry that typically has 100% or more turnover a year. They dropped it 69% in that same period of time. They ran the program to impact nursing, and it still had the same impact on the other areas, driving down nursing turnover. So I'll never forget going back to that particular COO, and I didn't have to say a word. They see the numbers, and now they go from what I call recognition results doubters to believers, and realizes, wait a minute, we can really monetize the results of this when it's done well. When we don't make this about tchotchkes, we don't make this about prizes, and we get people to follow the three steps on how to do it strategically in as little as a 10-minute investment of their time, it drives business results. Always. Always. It just always drives some sort of a business result if you get management to do it well. And the most important thing for listeners to remember is it doesn't take a lot of time. It actually saves an ungodly amount of time. If you drive down nursing turnover in an institution with a few thousand people, a healthcare institution, by 30%, how much time does that save you? Yes, it saves $1 million, but how many hours of time from people not showing up at shifts, having to pay overtime, all the absenteeism that starts to go down as well, and then you're not spending all that time looking for new people. And then think about the experience that that improves for the patient and for the other colleagues and coworkers. I mean, life is just a whole lot better when people invest this 10 minutes by Friday.
So it doesn't take a lot of time. There's a huge ROI to it. Everybody's happier, hopefully a little bit healthier too. You definitely have a different kind of an organization when everyone is getting what they crave. So Greg, somehow we are already out of time. Like I told you, I was sure we wouldn't have any trouble having plenty to talk about. So maybe we'll have to chat more at some point. But for now, for those that are listening, that are interested, that want to create a culture at their organization where people can get what they crave, obviously picking up the book. But what other ways are there to engage with you, engage with your company, or learn more?
So you can engage with me at greg@greglederman.com is my email. You can get the book on Amazon. It's the best place to get the book. And greglederman.com. And definitely check out Reward Gateway for those that are listening that are interested in learning more about how to put an engagement platform in place that supports fueling the environment with what people crave.
Well, Greg, thanks so much for your time today. Lots to think about for listeners and lots of best practices to share. And I can promise you, I have a lot of dog ears. I have a lot of notes in the Crave book. You'll learn even more. He'll dive into really the nuts and bolts of how to make this recognition work. And like he said, you know, maybe you do want an enterprise-level solution. Maybe you just want to give some more strategic recognition, and you can learn about that just by reading the book. So I highly encourage you to pick that up. You can definitely find Greg online. Thanks so much for joining us today, Greg.
Andrew, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Wicked Squid Studios, Rochester, New York's premier podcast development team. The Wicked Squid family brings ideas to life through the art of audio production. From custom jingles and creative services to studio memberships and educational curriculum, their outfit strives to empower all members of society to build a more equal and colorful world. Learn more about their operation at wickedsquidstudios.com.